Okay, good morning. So, as I said a few minutes ago, I hope you've all got a copy of the handout for today's lecture. Once again, we're going to make notes as we go along, supplementing the lecture slides today. Right, so far in this course, we've considered two models of structured data. The entity relationship model, which was a way to help us organize the data and inform the process of database design. And then the relational model, which was a nice concrete model, which is close to the way we're going to implement the data, the database. The second half of this part of the course on structured data is going to consider the interesting question of, once you've got data in a database, how do you extract the data and find out the properties you want to know? You've got the database there for a reason. In the case of our working example, the university wants to keep data on the students it's got in the university, the courses they take, and the university wants to be able to find out information using the database, and that is the topic of querying. And we're going to consider three different approaches to querying, culminating in two lectures' time with the SQL query language, which is the query language that's used in practice. But before that, we're going to consider two other approaches to querying, both of which were used in the design of the SQL query language. And today's is called relational algebra, and the other one is called tuple relational calculus. And in fact, both these approaches were ingredients in Codd's original paper when he first proposed the relational model. And one of the strengths of the relational model was that it supported these two styles of querying that we're going to look at, the relational algebra approach and the tuple relational calculus approach. Now, I didn't explicitly flag that with the last set of lecture notes, but there is related reading associated with this, which is chapter 4 of the Database Management Systems book. Unfortunately, for copyright reasons, having handed out one chapter already, I'm not allowed to hand out any more chapters of the book. But there are copies of this book available on reserve in the main library. So if you would like to supplement the lecture notes and the work we're going to do on the blackboard today with additional reading, then you can go to the main library and have a look at the book there. It might also be possible to get parts of this chapter on Google Books. I'm not sure. It certainly was possible a couple of years ago. I don't know what is currently available. I haven't checked to see what's currently available on Google Books. But certainly there are copies in the main library. Right, so querying, as I've already said, basically the job we want to do is we've got some data stored in a database and we want to find out something useful about the data. So we need a language for talking to the database and saying, well, this is the information I want to get. Give me this information. And as I said, we're going to consider three approaches, and today's is going to be relational algebra, which is a procedural approach, and that means that when we say the data we want to get out of the database, the way that we ask for it also gives the system a mechanism for finding that data. So we don't just say what we want, but at the same time, we're implicitly saying a way in which we intend the database to give us back the data. So procedural means it comes with an associated method of extracting the data. I'll say more about the alternative declarative approach in the next lecture, because you might think, well, whatever approach you're going to do, you're going to have to tell the computer how to get the information out of the data. But in fact, that's not the case. But with today's approach, the relational algebra, it is considered a procedural approach. That is, every query we write has an associated method of extracting the data from the database. So there's a procedure there, how we actually get the data we're asking for. And I'm going to, it's not so explicit on the slides, but I'm going to make that very explicit, this procedure very explicit in the lecture. Okay, so relational algebra, it's a procedural approach. As I've already said, in practice, people use SQL, and we'll see more about SQL later. So to forewarn you about relational algebra, well, why don't people use relational algebra? Well, there are a number of reasons, but one of which, as you'll see, it's a bit like querying in a foreign language. So you'll see there's quite a lot of notation involved, some funny letters involved. It's very mathematical, as well. So actually, I think in terms of the three methods of querying, this is probably the hardest one to understand relational algebra. So today is going to be a slightly tough lecture, although we're going to start off slowly. And that's why there's going to be a lot of blackboard work to explain what's going on the slides. Okay, so it's called relational algebra because the main part of relational algebra is to compose expressions like the algebraic expressions you write in mathematics, like x plus y minus z would count as an algebraic expression in mathematics. In relational algebra, we form similar expressions, only we don't use symbols like plus and minus. Instead, we use special symbols from relational algebra, and these are called operators. And what the operators do is, instead of taking numbers and producing a number, like the operations from mathematical algebra, they take relations, that is tables, database tables, as their inputs, and they produce database tables as outputs. So the operators stand for operations acting on tables in the relational model. And there are a large number of basic operations. Well, actually not such a large number, there are five basic operations. So basically the main topic of the lecture is going to be to define these operations, but also to look at some very useful operations we can define from them and to see a little bit why these operations are useful. Right, so as I said, it's a bit like writing queries in a foreign language. So the first two operations we're going to consider are called selection and projection, and we use lowercase Greek letters to represent these. So selection, because it begins with S, is written using a lowercase Greek sigma, and projection, because it begins with P, is written using a lowercase Greek pi. And these are basically ways of, you've got a table or a collection of tables in your database. The selection and projection, they take one table as input, and they allow us to extract parts of that table in terms of what you might think of as rectangular subsets of the table. And it's best to see this explained really by looking at examples. So a simple example of selection, we have the students table here, and this is the relational algebra expression here. As I said, relational algebra expressions, they take relations, that is tables as input, and they produce a table as output. So the input table here is the students table, which is displayed up above. The expression says we will select using the predicate, that's the property, age is greater than 18, from the students table. And what it does is it returns all the rows in the table that satisfy this property. So the property says age is greater than 18, so it looks at each row, it looks in the age column, that's the age field, it checks whether the number is, this is a strictly greater than sign, so it checks whether the number is strictly greater than 18, and if it is, it returns that row. So it ends up returning two rows of the table, this one for Helen and this one for Peter. So we can already see, just from this basic example, we can see some general properties of the selection operation. So the resulting table, because we're returning just a number of rows selected from the table, the resulting table has the same number of columns as the original table, and these columns have the same names, and they have the same types associated with them. So that means, because it has the same number of columns, it has, the result has the same arity as the input, and also the same schema. Remember, the arity is just the number of columns. The schema is the collection of names of the columns together with their types. But it doesn't have, of course, the same number of rows, so that means the cardinality, remember the number of rows in a table was called the cardinality, changes. So we'll write that down. The cardinality may change. It can only go down, of course, because we're taking rows out, we're not putting anything in. So the general form of a selection is we have a relation instance, that's a table, so we give a table name. In that previous example, that was the students' table. We say select on a predicate, but the predicate need not be a simple predicate like the one we had there. It can be combined also using Boolean operations such as and, not, or. So you can have several predicates combined together. So for example, we might, another example would be select age greater than 18, as we had before, and, so this is a symbol for and, age strictly less than 22 from the students' table. And if we go back to the previous slide, you'll see if we did that, well, then we would just end up with just one row in the table. Of course, if we said and age is strictly less than 20, we'd end up with an empty table. So selection can also result in empty tables being produced. There might be no data matching our query. But if we gave this particular query here, maybe I'll put the, is it better if I put the light on there? Is that better? So for this particular query, we will get just the row consisting of Helen out of the table. And I also said I wanted to make clear in what sense these operations are procedural. Well, here there's a very obvious procedure associated with this selection query. The computer just goes through every line in the table, checks the predicate on each line, and if it passes, then as it goes along, it builds a table, which is the results table, so it just adds a tuple, that is a line from the input table to the output table every time the predicate is passed. And also I want to emphasize the usefulness of this kind of query. Well, this is a very simple query, but you know, in a database you really might want to ask, return all the students whose ages are within a certain range, for example. So that might be a useful query to make. So you can see how we're coding up using this sort of notation, queries that we really might want to make in practice. So projection works in the opposite direction. Okay, we've done the selection form. Projection works in the opposite direction to selection, in that what projection does is it returns a number of columns out of the table rather than a number of rows. So here's the expression we're building up. We're again using the operation symbol, pi for projection. We're projecting on the name and the age fields on the students' table. So what we produce here, it says return a table that contains every row from the students' table, but just the information that appears in the name and the age fields. Okay? So projection, we see that the result has a different arity now. Here we've reduced the arity from 4 to 2, and again a different schema, because the schema before had the 4 fields, matriculation number, name, age and email. Now it just has the 2 fields, name and age. So result has different arity. Well, it can have a different arity. We could also project on all columns if we wanted to, but that would be a pretty useless thing to do. So has different arity and schema from the input. But now it's always going to have the same number of rows, but now it has the same cardinality. Okay? Right, so I think I've already made all these points. The general form is just that we give a list of field names to, as the subscripts, the bits, and the, in the, this is the subscript position here of the projection operator, which is this pi, lowercase pi. And we end up with a relation with the same arity, but a different schema as the input relation. But of course, sometimes we might want to do both things. We might, so the use, so, I, oh yeah, maybe I forgot to comment on, so the way it's implemented in this case, so again, it's very obvious. So in this case, what the system does is it goes through every row and it builds up a table as it goes along. And this time it copies information from every row because it's projecting, but it just builds up a table with two columns. And the sort of usefulness of this sort of query is that often one is only interested in some of the fields of information in a database table rather than all of them. So this is a way of extracting just the relevant bits to your query. And it's often very useful to combine these two operations. So we have the selection one that selects some rows and the projection operation that selects some columns. And we can combine them, for example, like this, and here we are combining, we can write these two queries in either direction. So we can either project the student's table first onto the name and age, resulting in this table, and then select the age, or we can, so we're working from the inside out here. This is an important point to realize. Like in mathematics, we're applying this operation to this table, which produces a result table, and then we're applying this operation to the result table. So this query is applying the projection first and then the selection to the resulting table from the projection. But we can also write it the other way around. We can apply the selection first to select the rows of students whose age is greater than 18 and then project afterwards. And we have an equality there because these two result in the same table, namely the one in the corner there, yes? Right, actually, that's a good question. If we did projection age comma name, that would change the order, because that, at least I think so. One doesn't normally do this sort of thing, so that's a good question. I think it will change the order, but it somehow depends on your model, really. I mean, this is a theoretical language. Yeah, so another. Right, very good question. So I was just going to give an example that's almost exactly the same as that. So what I wanted to illustrate now, and this is basically answering your question, was that, so here we see that selecting and projection, it doesn't matter the order you do them in good circumstances, but sometimes you have to be careful. And the reason is for the question that was just asked now. But so I'm going to put this as beware in combining them. If we consider from this table, so if we make this query here, so here we're selecting the rows where the student is his name is greater than 18, and then giving the name of the students. So you can read this query. So I want to emphasize the informal readings to understand the kinds of useful queries we're writing. So we're here saying, give me the names of all students whose age is strictly greater than 18. So we can write this like this, and that's okay. And in that case, this will return the table. Well, the schema just has one field, the name field, and it's going to be, here we have Helen and Peter, I believe. But if we try to write this the other way around, so if we select, with the age greater than 18, and we project on the name of the student's table, then this doesn't work. This is a badly formed query. It doesn't work. And the reason is, the reason is that you've projected this table and you only have a name field at this point. So now when you come to do the selection, you can't ask if the age is greater than 18 because there is no age field in the table that you're inputting to the selection. Okay, was that answering your question? Yeah, okay, good. Okay, are there any more questions at this point? So these are the two most basic operations that take just, each one takes one table as input, the selection and the projection ones. Now we get to the slightly more complicated operations that take two relations as inputs. And these are closely related to operations that you may know from basic set theory in mathematics. Let's just put this. So the operations we're going to consider, are a union, a difference, and an intersection operation. So you're probably familiar with the operations of union and intersection in set theory. We're actually going to define the intersection operation using other operations, and we're going to define another operation called cross product. And these all share the property that they take two input tables and combine them in some way to produce an output table. So they're like, some of them are, well, in fact, they're all motivated by analogous operations in set theory, but they're not exactly the same because they have to be redefined in a database. The objects we're dealing with are not sets, but they're tables, which are things with more structure in them than sets. They've got these schemas associated with them, and the data is arranged in this nice sort of rectangular, well, nice form that you can view in this as this sort of rectangular table. So the union is a way of combining two relations, and basically, like in set theory, when you union two sets in set theory, you put the elements of both sets together into one set. So just in the same way, the union of two relations, we're going to combine two relations, that is two tables, and put the information in them together in one big relation that encompasses both. But because relations have schemas associated, in order to do this, we need, in a sensible way, we need to make sure that the two relations we're giving as input have schemas that match. So what that means technically is we need a notion of when two schemas match. And this is given by the notion of two schemas. In fact, the official plural of schema is schemata. I use the lazy plural in speaking, which is schemas. So two schemas are said to be compatible if they have the same number of fields, so we've got the same number of columns in each, and going from left to right, the types of the fields match. So the first field, if in one table it's an integer, in the other table it also has to be an integer, and so on. And we're only allowed to form a union in the case that we have two relations, R and S, for which the schemas are compatible according to this definition. Then we give an output table which has the same schema as those two tables. But of course, the two tables might not have strictly the same schema, they might just have compatible schema, which means we have to associate names to the schema of the output table. And this is done according to this note at the bottom of the slides. But the examples we're going to consider are all going to, in any case, have just matching schemas that are identical. So don't get too worried about this for the purposes of this lecture. Right. So here's an example of a union. So we've got two tables for the same schema as the student's table. One's called S1 and one's called S2. And we union them And that just means we form, so these schemas are not just compatible, they're identical. So that means there's no problem pulling all the data from each of the two input tables, S1 and S2, together into a common larger output table, which we write as S1 union S2. But notice here we had four entries in the S1 table and five in the S2 table, but we've only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 entries in the union table. And the reason is that two entries appeared in both tables. So like in set theory, when you union two sets, well, a set can only contain one element. So sets in mathematics only contain one of any kind of any individual entity. So in the same way, we're not in the relational model, we're not allowed to, it doesn't make sense in the relational model. And actually, this is a difference with SQL, which I'll talk about more when we look at SQL. But in the relational model, one is only allowed to have any individual row occurring once in a table. So that's why the common rows here, which are Mary and... So Mary is the same here and here, and also Peter here and here. So these common rows only appear once in this union table because they're only allowed to appear once in the relational model. Okay. And set difference operation is like the union. So the conditions for applying a set difference are exactly the same as those for forming a union. Once again, we require R and S to have compatible schemas. And what the set difference does is it includes all those elements in R that don't belong to S. So we essentially remove any element from R that belongs to the table S. And the intersection, just like the intersection in mathematics, includes those rows in R that are also rows in S. So that's the rows that belong to both R and S. And you can define the intersection in terms of the set difference, which is why we don't consider intersection as a basic operation in its own right, because the intersection, so the rows that appear in both R and S, we can define that by taking away from R exactly those rows that appear in R but don't appear in S. Okay, so that's this formula at the bottom. A nice, neat little formula there for forming the intersection. And here's an example of the set difference. So we start off with the same relations S1 and S2, and we subtract S2 from S1. Well, what that means is we're removing from S1 all those rows in S1 that also appear in S2. So we already saw that that's the row containing Mary and the row containing Peter. So they disappear, and we see that the whole row has to agree in order for it to be removed. But in this case, the whole row does agree. So we end up with this table with just John and Helen in. And there's an example of the intersection, which is doing the opposite thing. So it's those rows that occur in both the tables, and that's just Mary and Peter. Okay, so again, I said I would emphasize the implementational aspect, but I think it's very obvious how union, set difference, and intersection are implemented. So for union, SQL will just go through the first input table, whatever's implementing your relational algebra will go through the first input table, return all its rows, and then through the second input table and return any row that it hasn't already seen before. For intersection, it'll go through the first input table and check that each row appears if it appears in the second input table and return only those rows. And the set difference will check each row and return exactly the rows that don't appear in the second table. So you can see quite intuitively how each of these operations is procedural in the sense that it has an associated means of constructing the output table that comes with it. Right. And now we get to a slightly more complicated operation called cross product, which corresponds to, in mathematics, the operation that is known as forming the Cartesian product of two sets. Now, I don't know if you've... How many people have heard of the Cartesian product of two sets in mathematics? Right, well, a good a good proportion of you, but it doesn't really matter because the important thing for here is to understand the notion of cross-product as it applies to a relational database. So again, this is a binary operation, and now what we're going to form is a relation which we write as R times S, R cross product of S, where here there are no conditions on the schemas for R and S. They can R and S, they can have the same schema or they can have different schemas, it doesn't matter. And the schema for the table we're going to produce is the schema is constructed by first listing all the field names from the R, from the first input to the cross product, and then listing all the field names from the second input to the cross product, and always associating them the same types. And the resulting relation contains one tuple, so consisting of a tuple from the first table and a tuple from the second table, for each possible way you have of forming a pair of tuples from the two tables. So here's the example of a cross product. So we're now combining the S1 table we had before, which is the schema of the student's table, so matriculation number, name, age, and email, with an R, which is a schema from the courses table, where we have a code, a name of the course, and a year. So the cross product of this, well, the schema is obtained by producing, by copying all these fields, so we have one for each of the fields of S1, and all the fields here, so one for each of the schema of R. So the cross product, the arity of R times S, of R cross product S, is now, so that's the number of columns in R cross product S. Can somebody say what that is? Yes?
Sorry, can we do the cross product with the sets which have the same attribute?
So you seem to be asking two questions. One is, can we cross product two tables that have the same schema? And the answer is yes, but you seem to be a little bit worried about the names, because they'll have the same names and you're going to have the same name appearing in two different places here. Is that a little bit what's concerning you? Because that's a good... So there is an issue here that I haven't gone into yet, which I don't know if this is addressing your question. There is an issue here that we've got the field name appearing twice here. So we've got two columns called name. And actually, we're going to have to address that, because we're not really allowed to have two fields called name. And if you cross product two tables that have the same schema, you'll have the same names duplicated. But all the field names will be duplicated, and again, you're not allowed that. So is that what was concerning you? Yeah. So there is an issue here, and we're going to fix it in a moment. So good, but not now, because I want to address another issue first, which is this question. So can anyone tell me what the arity of R cross product S is? Yes?
The arity of R plus the
arity of S. Right, very good. So that, because we're just putting the schemas side by side, so the number of columns is the arity of R plus the arity of S. And then the entries are formed by combining every entry here with every entry here. In every way we can. So the cardinality of R times S is, can somebody say what this is? Yes? Yeah, so it's the product of the cardinality. So this is why, so remember, the cardinality is the number of rows. This is one of the reasons that it's called the product. Okay, but now I'm going to come to your point, which is to do with the names. And we do see we've got let me just write. We do see we've got an issue here because we've actually produced a table that has an illegal schema, because every, in the relational model, every field is required to have a different name. So how do we solve this? And this is called, so this issue is called the problem of naming conflicts. And essentially, there are three ways of resolving this problem for a cross product. So there are three ways of solving naming conflicts. One is called the use of prefix names. And this is essentially the solution that's adopted in SQL, as we'll see later. So prefix names are when one has a naming conflict like this, one prefixes the common name with the name of the table that it, the table that it originally came from. So in this case, we would have, so we will use two columns. Well, the two columns will be called the name. So the two columns are called s1.name, because that's this column here. So this schema, instead of name here, is going to be called s1.name here, because that comes from the s1 table. And this one, this name, is going to be called r.name. So this is a very user-friendly way of doing it, because you see, when you write the names of the fields, you see which table the fields came from originally. Another way that's adopted in relational algebra is called positional names. And then you have a name that reflects the position it appears in the table. And there are also different styles of doing this. But one is to say, this is the name field from the first input table, and this is the name field from the second input table. So then our two columns for name would be called name.1, because it comes from the first input table, and name.2. And the third approach is by avoiding the problem altogether, by before you do the cross product, make sure that the two tables you input to the cross product don't have common field names. And this can be done using an operation in relational algebra called renaming, and that's the point that I'm going to start at in the next lecture, which is on Tuesday next week. Because I don't know if you remember from the start of the course, but on Friday this week, there's going to be a special lecture from the Careers Service about making the most of your time at university. I believe the title is going to be something like that. I'll put some more about it on the course blog. Okay, so that's it for today. Remember, tutorials start this afternoon and tomorrow. So if you haven't sorted out your tutorial groups, please make sure that you do very quickly.